The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Unmuted, case 18 in the Blue Cliff record. That would be a wonderful Dharma talk, wouldn't it? The whole Dharma talk on mute. That would certainly give you what you needed, right? The National Teacher Seamless Monument. Emperor Su Zhang asked National Teacher Wei Zhang, "After you die, what will you need?" The National Teacher said, "Build a seamless monument for me." The emperor said, "Please tell me, Master, what the monument would look like." The National Teacher was silent for a long time. Then he asked, "Do you understand?" The emperor said, "I don't." The National Teacher said, "I have a disciple to whom I have transmitted the teaching, Dan Yuan, who is well versed in this matter. Please summon him and ask him about it." After the National Teacher passed on, the emperor summoned Dan Yuan and asked him what the meaning of this was. Dan Yuan said, "North of the Xiang River, south of the Tan, in between there's gold sufficient to a nation. Beneath the shadowless tree, the community ferry boat. Within the crystal palace, there's no one who knows." And the verse that Wei Nung added, Shuido added, he said, "The seamless monument, it is hard to see. A clear pool does not contain a blue dragon's coils, layers upon layers, shadows upon shadows. Throughout all time, it shone to humankind." So this koan is one of the entry points for this weekend, our training period together, our retreat. The entry point, of course, is each moment as it arises. Dharma gates are countless. I vow to enter them. And we have been saying again and again how generous and how complete, we might say, how seamless the Dharma is. In at every moment, no distinction. Of course, the human mind sorts the world and judges the world. Good, bad, I like this. I'm having a good morning. I'm having a bad morning. No problem with the judgments. As we say, you don't have to judge your judgments. This basic friendliness we've been talking about is an unconditional friendliness. So this possibility of appreciating what arises, regardless of our opinion. And such an opportunity here, and we are deep into it now, though we are many miles, many hundreds of miles, many thousands of miles apart, somehow we are here together. And not only are we here together, but the host of our ancestors, the nameless women and men, and the ones that have names and stories, and all of the names and stories of your life and my life, we all sit together. Zen is part of the Mahayana, the great vehicle, which was basically a reform movement in Buddhism after the Buddha taught around his teachings grew something that came to be called the Way of the Elders, the Theravada. Then several hundred years after the Buddha, there came to be other teachings. And these other teachings coalesced to give birth to Tibetan Buddhism and to Zen. And one of the innovations of the Mahayana was this wonderful world, this boundless world, all beings throughout space and time. If you've seen Tibetan paintings, they are quite lovely and gorgeous and evocative, paintings of celestial beings, paintings of animal beings, all the different states of the self are depicted. And if you spend enough time with any of those paintings, perhaps you can begin to see that all those beings are within you. This great world is, we say, a round mirror, the great round mirror. You come in front of it, you are born, and this great round mirror of your life reflects without opinion. When anger comes in front of the mirror, anger is reflected. When kindness, when contraction, when sorrow. And this reflection of life, this is the self meeting the self. Dogen called this Jiju-yu-zamai, self-receiving and self-employing samadhi, practice, absorption. We might say, as we sit here, a big self meets little self. Little self is the particular content of this moment for you, your opinion, the thoughts, the feelings, the sensations, all of that. All of that appears in the field of big self. A big self is awareness. And we say my awareness, but I am seeing, I am feeling, I am hearing. But who is it that is listening to this Dharma talk right now? Who is it who is breathing the breath you are taking in and letting out? Who is this one? One of the great investigations, one of the great koans in Zen. Who am I? As we do our walking practice, you might see if you can find the one who is walking. Of course, we say, well, I am walking. Who is this I that we have invested so much in that is hard to even consider questioning? And so in the Mahayana, there are worlds within worlds. Sometimes we call this the Sambhogakaya, the dream body, the appreciation body. And in these koans and in the verses appended to the koans, we are invited into this a rich and wondrous world. We live in a world of all kinds of energies and spirits, all kinds of ghosts that are vivid and alive. And we say some things are real and some things are not real. but on this energetic way. When you call someone to mind, the brain registers the same as if they were really here. And what caught me this morning as I was reading again, looking into this koan, was the verse by Don Juan. So the emperor goes to the national teacher's student, Don Juan, and asks him to explain the meaning. And he says, south of the Xiang River, north of the Don River, in between there's gold sufficient to a nation, beneath the shadowless tree, the community ferry boat. Within the crystal palace, there's no one who knows. So beneath the shadowless tree, the community ferry boat. How lovely this image of the shadowless tree. Of course, every tree, everything has a shadow. You have to illuminate it from somewhere, and when you illuminate one side, the other side is not illuminated. This is the world of form, and we know it well. But there is another kind of illumination that our Zen practice points us to. This is the illumination where everything is lit from within, not a light, a source coming from the outside. But when we look at each thing, we can perhaps begin to see that it is preaching the Dharma, that it is vibrating at a particular frequency. I love walking through the temple garden or any garden at this time of year. Here in New England, just in the last 2 days, the leaves have started to come out on the trees, and there is this lovely golden green, soft hue to the world. Are many trees, the oak trees and the maple trees, the katsura trees, and there is an energy of rising, rising life that is coming, and all the daffodils are blooming. Walking through the temple garden, different shapes and colors, everything in motion, and everything offering itself. The daffodil is utterly being a daffodil, a wholehearted presence. Everything is offering itself to us, but requires our participation. This Sambhogakaya, this dream body, close but quite different from sometimes we say we live our life as if we were in a dream, we're sleepwalking. And our Zazen, our practice, is to wake up to the vividness of this life, and the vividness of this life is in the particular, and the particular is the voice of the infinite. The particular is the absolute that is manifesting briefly, also briefly now in the form of the yellow daffodil, now in the form of this round rock on the path. So beneath the shadowless tree, in this world of fullness and emptiness, in this dream world, in this world where you were once a little girl or a little boy, you were once, someone was changing your diapers, then you were going to grade school, and then you were in high school, and now look at you. who is the person in the mirror, and where has your life gone? It is indeed right here. All of it right here. This shadowless tree, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the ancestors, the emperor, Dan Yuan, the national teacher, all here in the communal ferry boat. This ferry boat, there is an image of crossing over to the other shore, crossing to the Pure Land. In Zen, we say when we get to the other shore, we find that it has been here. We have been there all along. This communal ferry boat of the Sangha, of practitioners, the Sangha of living beings, the Sangha of all of the matter and the dark matter in the universe. We're all here along for the ride. And even in the Crystal Palace, even in some great state of awakening or aliveness or presence, there is no knowing. Even the Buddhas and the ancestors don't know. So we are invited here in the seamless monument under the shadowless tree to appreciate this great journey to where we already are, this great communal ferry boat. And now Melissa will continue in the ferry boat.
So as we sit here, having listened to the first part of this Tay Show, the first part that took us deeply into the recognition of everything shining with its own light, everything offering us the Dharma, all of us together in the communal ferry boat. How is it for you right now? Even though we can look and look and search and search for something that will help us to live more fully, the reality is that all of that is already here. The searching itself is equal to whatever we find. There's nothing that shows us a path, even though we call it a path or a way, from one thing to another. Everything that's ever happened is happening now. Everything that you encounter is yourself. And if you make a separation and say, I see the daffodil, then you're hurting yourself. There's just daffodil. There's just bell. There's just the grasses and the darkness. There's just this. Again and again and again, we're called back to the gold that fills the universe. There's a famous story in the Tibetan tradition, which is a very long shaggy dog story. I won't tell you the whole thing, but it turns on a sincere student who is trying to please his teacher, and he ends up going to India and coming back and going to India and coming back, and finally comes back with a big container of gold to give the teacher. And the teacher says, oh, wonderful, thank you for bringing me this gold. And he takes it out of the student's hand and blows on it. It's gold dust, and the gold goes everywhere. And the student says, how could you do this? It's taken me so long to gather this for you. What are you doing, blowing it all away? And the teacher says, don't you understand? All the world is gold to me. All the world is gold to me. That means everything. That means some dog crap on the sidewalk. That means a sunny day and a foggy day. That means feeling really strong in our practice and feeling like utter failures. All of it is the gold that we touch into when we really recognize that the world has been offering itself to us for our whole lives, and we haven't seen it because we've been looking somewhere else. In this poem of Don Yuan, one of the collectors of the Blue Cliff Record, Shui Do, who also gives us a capping verse for the koan a little bit later, has comments on each of Don Yuan, the disciple of the national teacher, the second teacher that the emperor goes to. He has comments on every line of Don Yuan's verse. And the first thing that that Don Yuan says, south of Xiang, north of Tan, Shui Do comments, a single hand does not make a random sound. This is supposedly the first time that the koan invented by Hakuin in the 17th century, 1,000 years after these events happened, used this little piece of Shui Do's comment to ask, what is the sound of the single hand? And if you really understand these teachings about all the world is gold to me and there's sufficient gold to fill the universe, then you know what the sound of the single hand is. If you think it's something in particular, even if you think it's related to a sound, you're a million miles away. But if you begin to perceive the world directly, without interfering with that perception, without saying, I am hearing, or I am seeing, or I know, then the world comes to you and offers its gold to you. The world offers itself as it is, every single thing being it. When Don Yuan says, in between there's gold sufficient to a nation, Shui Do adds the comment, a rough-hewn staff. And this is a reference to the shakujo, as we call it in Japanese, the staff that's carried by a Zen master, which has little bells on the top that sometimes you hear us using it in ceremonies. It shakes and rattles to keep away all of the ghosts and the demons that might get in the middle of our direct perception of the universe. Last night we heard the ghost who tells us not to waste a moment of our life. And this kind of admonition is part of this look, see, feel, hear, all of it. Every sense perception is trying to teach you the Dharma. The ghosts and demons that get in the way are the parts of ourselves that make separation. And it's natural, those parts that make separation, that's it too. So this rough-hewn staff is as valuable as a pile of gold dust, and can be blown away and seen for what it is, just a long stick that has some bells affixed to the top. Everything is it. And then beneath the shadowless tree, the community ferry boat, all of us in this wonderful boat, Shui Do says, the sea is calm, the rivers are clear. This a sometimes apparently difficult, painful journey towards home, towards this, is not so hard when we stop opposing reality, when we just let ourselves sink into whatever's here in this moment. The sea is calm and the rivers are clear. And then within the crystal palace, there's no one who knows. Shuido says, the Taisho is finished. It's enough now to have said all this. Thank you, Don Yuan, for your poem. The literal translation of that line is, he has raised it up. He has lifted it up so that we can see it. It's always here, but we miss it. He has raised it up. It's all done. This is the way that we can be directed towards everything that means everything to us. And so Shuido then comments, the seamless monument. To see it is hard. The dragon does not thrive in a placid lake. Layers upon layers, shadows upon shadows, forever and ever it is shown to people. One Zen master is said to have commented on Shuido's poetry, which fills this volume, 100 poems that he wrote to comment on every one of the cases in the Blue Cliff Record, and says, really, what they all boil down to is this one line. The dragon does not thrive in a placid lake. The dragon is your great spirit of practice, the great awakened heart that is often depicted as this wild animal that comes up out of its cave to show its knowledge for you, to show and point things out to you. And it doesn't thrive in a placid lake. It has to be completely active in the world in order to experience the world directly. So whoever that Zen master was, he appreciated this line. He said, this is what Zen all boils down to, and I agree. The dragon thrives in your life. All the difficulties, all the challenges of being a human being, all of the challenges of living in this world as it is, you must be a dragon. You must see that all of these things are gateways to awakening. Although we long for a placid lake, we will never learn anything sitting at the bottom of that pond. The seamless monument, to see it is hard. The dragon does not thrive in a placid lake. Layers upon layers, shadows upon shadows, forever and ever, it is shown to people. Forever and ever, here it is. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we will have our Dharma dialogue. So you know what to do. Raise your Zoom hand and we'll call on you. And if you want to see us and the people talking, you can put us on video view,
speaker
view rather. And Paul will be joining us in offering comments as well. Yes, Chris.
Thank you for that. I always appreciate it when you write a talk exactly for me. So thank you. I went to walk the dog today and noticed that when I was driving my car, all the trees rotate, they pirouette to me. I drive down the road. And I was thinking about that as David talked about the shadowless tree. But thank you. That was an extraordinarily moving talk for me.
Well, and there it is at the center of the universe. you, each one of us. I once went on a kayaking trip up in Georgian Bay, and it was a full moon, and we all went out paddling. And I felt so bad for the people I went out with, because the moon was coming directly to my kayak across the water, right? But they had other ideas. And this Dharma talk, when we're present, we see it is all for us. It is all given. How wonderful. Yeah.
Thanks,
Chris.
Will.
Thanks for that. It was a very moving talk. I guess my question is about difficulty. Yesterday, I felt like the tree was not very shadowful. It was losing shadows. It was great. Today, my mind is back with feelings that I apologize because I feel like I always bring up the same thing, but that's all right, I guess. And that is sort of feelings of stuckness, which apply to my personal life or my professional life, and then very easily come up in Zen too, in practice. Thinking, oh, you know, this isn't. So I know one thing you can do when that comes up is wait, right? Because it will go away. But I guess I'm wondering if there are, you know, if there's some other perspective as well, some way to, you know, helpfully address the conviction that one is not shining with one's own light, that the universe is not doing what it sometimes did, what it did yesterday, or what it might do some other time, what it's doing for someone else.
The answer is yes. Yes, there is another way, because it's true that if you wait, it will pass because everything passes. But maybe not. Maybe the work here is to turn towards your life as if this feeling of stuckness, which you're talking about, is it. And there's no way out. Mm. The only thing that's true. And you have to own it 100%. You have to say, yep, I'm stuck. I'm going to be stuck forever. This is what it's like. And get to know it. How could you be free in the middle of your stuckness?
That's
a koan. How could you be awake in the middle of your stuckness?
Yeah.
And there is a danger in our Zazen that we can develop this great endurance. Say, well, you know, this sucks, you know, it's really terrible, but sometime the bell will ring. But would encourage us all not to wait, right? We can notice the desire, but, you know, as Melissa's saying, what if we investigate? What if this is it? You know, what if the teachings are true?
Right, because the waiting becomes a strategy. Right. If I wait long enough, everything will be fine. But maybe not. You know, and this is something that people who have chronic illnesses, who are dying, who are in difficult conditions that don't lift, this is what they learn. And in Zazen, we try to replicate that in our own lives without having to endure those kinds of things. In a way, this is a preparation for that. This is it. This is my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the Sesshin is just a wonderful environment to dive into this exploration. You know, Will, you said that you recognize this in your Zen practice and in your professional life and in other aspects of your life. And here we're actually choosing to take the step back. And you know, the way through is direct. We can get so skilled about, paddling around the sandbar or, doing other things. And here we get to just hang out on that sandbar for a while, not with the sense of dwelling on it and making it any more than it is, but to actually to see it as it is. And the Sesshin is, a wonderful environment, and the safety and the instruction of the teachers and the Dharma and the Sangha that we can take this opportunity. Yeah.
I'm not hoping for any transformation, I guess.
Yeah.
That's
who knows? Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
You're already a Buddha. You just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
That's not a transformation. That's a recognition, a realization.
Right.
And we might say already hopeless.
Yeah.
It's great. Thanks, Will.
Dawn.
I just had a thought come about non-separation between self and daffodil, for example.
Yeah.
And as the daffodil shines, to me, I'm also in the world, and so I must also be shining back. And that's.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. I don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And remove that must. It's just an actuality. You are.
That's right.
And I think, so we often talk in our Zen and about being outside of receiving, but there's also something in our practice about letting the daffodil see you. Right. Most of us, to some degree, are hiding from the daffodils and from each other. And there's some wonderful way in our Zazen where we can practice allowing ourselves to be seen, right? Without technique or strategy, seen right where we are. And then, Dawn, as you say, so much, it is a dynamic relationship with the daffodil, with life, goes both directions. Yeah.
Lovely.
Steve Abdow.
Thank you for the talk. It was amazing. It's so great to be in Sesshin where I can hear that talk and I feel like I can understand that this is it. And this is my life. And I also really identify with the demons and ghosts who come up to separate me. Even coming into today, between this morning and this, I kind of lost it. The ghosts and the demons to me frequently are very intense and very seen as very uncomfortable, but I'm really listening to this friendliness, into this different, all the myriad parts of the self, and the idea of befriending this part, this self that feels tortured or different. It feels like it's compassion, but befriending these feelings and ghosts and demons as a way to be with it.
Well, you're pointing to something that's so important, Steve, that, the ghosts and demons are you too.
Mm-hmm.
So we befriend all the parts of ourselves, all of it. And that's really hard to do with the parts that make us cringe.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that this is part of me, yuck. With daffodils, it's easier, although still pretty challenging because we put up all kinds of blocks in the way. But that part of you that says something really mean to yourself, we all have that. So how can that be also this? Not just me, but this, because it's not even personal. The ghosts and demons come, but where are they coming from? Why are we calling them ghosts and demons? It's a great all these different impulses and forces that drive us. So that looks like the way to go. The way to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you want to say something, Paul?
Yeah, and Steve, I was also, you know, at one point you said that feel like you lost it. And I can really identify with that. You know, it's like, yep. And, you know, we're talking about the daffodils, and I love the daffodils as well. And would I love them if they were around 24/7, you know, 365 days? In some ways, we are that daffodil and we're here. And so to lose it and to, quote, have this false sense that we've lost it and then to realize it again. I mean, this is what our ongoing practice is that it is waking up to this moment and this moment and this moment of our life as it is, never lost. And we can have the sense of that it's not here. Not searching for anything, but as Melissa Roshi is saying, revealing it over and over and over, already here.
Thanks. Bill.
Yes, hi. Thank you for this wonderful talk. Lots of things to take home, but I think one that really stuck with me is the world is all gold to me, even the dog crap on the sidewalk. So, and I know this to be true. I have all these strong emotions, these weather events that I can just sit and ride through. But the issue with me, and I suppose with most folks, is that I keep forgetting this. I keep forgetting that all the world is gold to me. Right. So I know there's no way, there's no technique that's going to solve this issue for me, but just bringing me back to these issues, that it's just feelings, that they will pass, but yet it's part of the Dharma, appreciating that all this is part of the Dharma. And that I hope to not forget, knowing that I will forget.
Well, and I want to say, Bill, especially the places that we don't like are the entry point. One teacher said successful people use their strengths, but geniuses use their weaknesses. So there is this transformation that we are called to. The Buddha, when he sat under the Bo tree, he did not defeat the armies of Mara, but he saw into their true nature. So these afflictions that arise, their true nature is just energy. And if we can rely on our brokenness, or if we can rely on our forgetfulness or our demons, we have inexhaustible energy. Mine will never give way. So there is this courage to sit in the fire, to be transformed, to see beyond the appearance.
And you know, a couple of things that what you said brought to mind for me, Bill. Everybody forgets this. And that's why we have Zen practice. You know, if you could just like read this in a book or hear a Dharma talk once and go, yep, got it, thanks. You know, what's on TV tonight? Then you'd be, you know, that would be amazing. I don't know human beings where that happens. So practice is essential. Coming together to practice, this is why we offer daily practice at the temple, why we offer these classes and these retreats. Because this is the reminder. This is not, you know, we're hearing the good news, as we might say, but we've heard it a million times before. And Will said, I'm always saying the same thing. And David and I are always saying the same thing. Paul and Michael, everybody, all the people, all the teachers in Boundless Way are always saying the same thing, but we cannot hear it enough.
Yeah.
The other thing is that us too, like I'm always happy to listen to my own Dharma talk as I'm saying the words that are coming out of my mouth. Yes, yes. So, thank you. Right in the moment. You know, I don't listen to them later really. But anyway, the other piece too is that dog crap on the sidewalk. It is like gold. And if you get it on your shoes, it stinks. So out, everything is gold. Oh, how wonderful. There's also a real rubber meets the road quality to all this stuff. There's the dragon coming out of the still pool to act and to avoid the dog crap, or even the bodhisattva thing of maybe getting some newspaper and you know, shoveling it up and disposing of it. So it's very nuanced and complex, and it never is just one thing.
Yeah.
And it is just one thing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Alan.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, Melissa. In fact, I love your discussion of that line, the dragon does not thrive in placid water. And I've been, you know, struggling to keep my head up in some very turbulent water lately. So it was kind of music to me. And then I was also thinking, though, that there are these times in our practice, sometimes on the cushion, sometimes not on the cushion, where it does seem that the waters grow calm, and you know, and all the silt falls to the bottom. That there's that too. Yeah. And I just wondered, you know, what about that part?
Yeah, well, that happens sometimes. However, if we are strategizing to have that happen, we miss most of our lives. So there are certainly religious practices and spiritual practices that emphasize becoming equanimous, calm, like a still forest pool. But human life doesn't seem to function that way. And I think Zen has a different response, appreciating the stillness and silence when it arrives, and the calmness. We call it samadhi, this just very clear, nothing happening. And then also doesn't think when the turbulence comes that that's some kind of failure. That's the next dharma gate. And it does, you know, just go up and down and up and down like this. That's my experience of life. Sometimes it's just so yummy. Everything is so lovely. And then something happens, right? Yeah. Oh, we've got to mute you, Bill. There we go. Yep. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, you. Alan. Thank you, Alan. Marla.
Yeah. Thank you. That was another wonderful talk. And it made something make sense to me that I had read and hadn't thought about in a long time. You know, Pierce was talking yesterday about not reading during Sesshin and how hard that is. And that reminded me we're not supposed to read during Sesshin. And I hadn't started, but I didn't start doing it either. But last night after the talks, I had a poem pop up in my memory that was a Nyogen Senzaki piece. I hadn't read in about a year. And it was one of his poems after he came out of internment and went back to LA and had a floating sangha. And I remember reading it and thinking it had the most beautiful imagery, because he hadn't seen his teacher in decades, but he was carrying his teacher's Zen in his empty fist. And then one day, on a rainy day on a street corner in Los Angeles, he just opened the hand and spread his fingers. And I think that was one of his, and I'm getting emotional because it's beautiful. I think that was about him sharing the Dharma with the West, but like everything just connected all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And it really is beautiful, but it's not just beautiful words.
Right. The words touch something deep in our heart, right? So it's not words are fine and expedience, and the arrow sunk deep in Marla's heart, right? And brought tears to her eyes. Yeah. And I think when the Dharma touches us, these images, these words that are already with us, it is appropriate to cry or laugh or whatever. Nothing more to say. It is true, right? The Dharma has been spread. Your Dharma, Marla, your hand opens and you give away everything you have to with great joy. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Marla.
And Let's hear from Joanne, and this will be the last person.
That was really beautiful. It kind of helped me with what I wanted to say. I often experience the world as very much gold, and sometimes it's off-putting to people, and I can't always find that skillful range to experience and have, you know, bound some kind of boundary about it. And yet listening to Marla and your response to Marla, I don't know. I think it's just, it seems to be just, you should just keep, I just keep showing up to whatever it is. Like, I don't mean to say, and so I'll just, I just, I mean, there's something that grips me and scares me about people's response to me. It's been like that my whole life. Pretty much as far as I can remember. And so I really loved what you said, what Marla said and how you responded to her. And it seems to fit.
Well, you know, Joanne, what you're pointing to is a very particular kind of boundary making. It is being able to identify your audience. Right? People do not want to hear about this. It actually just is not, even though everybody's on the communal ferry boat, some people are at the bow and some people are at the back, you know, and there's a little group somewhere in one of the cabins that's practicing zazen, and they're the people, right? So to speak to an audience that is not willing to hear what you have to say, and I've learned this over many years myself, it's kind of useless. But to be with people who are in the same part of the boat, the same part of the ferry, that's a discernment thing on your part. So like I have tons, I'm very blessed with good friends from, pre-birth, actually my best friend, our mothers were pregnant together, all the way to people I just met recently who are not interested in Zen.
Yeah, it's not about talking about Zen for me. I still can do the listen 9 times and talk once, but it's more just the way I experience things. Just
you can't share the way you experience. Yeah. That's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
I talk with them about conventional things.
Yeah.
I do not try to share this depth of my heart with people who I've learned love me, but don't want to hear this.
And the other perspective is Joanne and each one of us are a bright, shining light. Do not doubt yourself. Do not doubt the light that comes to you. We rely on you to be yourself. Some people will say, yay, wonderful. And other people will say, you're such an idiot. but through all this, as you say, just to show up, love the world as it comes to you, each one of us having the courage to show ourselves in that way. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And thanks. Yeah. And we will go back to... Zazen, I believe.
Take a breath or two.
We'll take a breath or two in Zazen. Yeah.